Welcome to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day call. My name is Allie, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. During the question and answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Michelle Bihar. Michelle, you may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this month's Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day conference call. Both Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelley Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, Executive Analyst for Auto Trader, will be speaking today on May 2017 results, followed by a Q&A session. First, we have Alec Gutierrez.
Thanks, Michelle, and thank you all for joining the call this morning. As we've been tracking the numbers coming in so far for the vast majority of major manufacturers, it looks as though we are on pace to hit our forecast, which called for 16.7 million SAR. That equates to volume a little bit in excess of 1.5 million units, about 1,525,000. We'll likely end in plus or minus maybe a percentage point of that total. So what that speaks to is a relatively flat performance compared to what we saw in May of 2016, which again signals and continues to support the idea of a plateauing U.S. auto sales market. Given what we've seen this month and over the last several months, we still believe that the annual target in 2017 will likely remain in the low 17 million unit range. But if we see any additional softening in the second half of the year, you could see overall sales in the high 16s. Overall, in the larger picture, if you look at auto sales over the last 15, 20, 25 years, a performance of high 16 million unit sales in the United States is still a very, very strong number. It's a great performance for the industry overall, but coming off of record numbers of 17.5 million units over the past 2 years, it's certainly not at the record-setting pace that we've seen. Now, when you look at mix, obviously the story remains very, very consistent there. Full-size pickup trucks, SUVs, specifically CUVs, compact crossovers, have continued to do very, very well. In fact, I think Ford F-Series sold something like 76,000 units last month alone, so continued strong performance there. And if you look at overall performance so far this year, again, small CUVs up more than 5%. The new subdivision within that segment, the subcompact CUVs, a lot of growth in that segment, sales up more than 80% or so. That's when you're talking about your Honda HRV rather than the CRV and its competitors. A lot of growth in that segment, but from an overall market share perspective, you're still talking low single digits in terms of overall U.S. share. Perhaps the larger story and one of the more significant challenge for automakers in the rest of 2017 and in the years to come has really been the weak performance of the more traditional sedan segments. You look at compact cars, mid-sized cars, sales are down significantly compared to where we were at last year, despite hefty incentive support, despite the availability of attractive finance options. Leasing is obviously still very popular. There are a lot of great lease deals in those segments. I know I've seen a lot of advertisements for Accord, Camry, Altima in the 2,000 down, 169, 179 a month range, if not $200 a month. Very, very compelling offers for these vehicles, yet sales are still down 20%. So from a segment perspective, a very diverse market in the sense that trucks and SUVs are still doing well, still growing in terms of share, traditional sedans on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Looking at the finance picture, the valuation picture, average transaction prices remain very, very strong. In May, we saw the average new car sold for about $33,200. That is a 2.5% increase year over year. Model to model, you will see slight increases. However, you have to consider still that mix continues to shift. Again, I noted Mid-sized car sales are down 20%. Full-size pickup trucks are up 5%. So as you see that mix skew towards trucks and SUVs, average transaction prices will increase as well. Consider, too, that inflation is also playing a large role. You look at the increase in transaction prices at 2.5%. It isn't that far off from what we're seeing just from inflation alone. On the macro side of the equation, stock market's still doing very, very well. The unemployment picture remains very strong. On the interest rate front, the Federal Reserve just stated to or decided to hold steady in May with their guidance, although they'd indicated in 2017 you could see the discount rate move up by as much as 1%. So far, they've held steady this year. I believe we saw a quarter point increase. I don't recall if that was late last year or early this year, but the Fed did make one move, but overall they've held steady on that front. Finally, just one last point. As we look at leasing, which remains at around just shy of 30% of all new cars sold at retail, that's excluding fleet and sales into rental. As I mentioned earlier, leasing still remains a popular option for many, but that will become more and more costly for manufacturers to support, certainly in the second half of 2017 to some degree, but as we get into 2018 and 2019, it's only going to grow to be more and more challenging. And that's specifically because there's been a steady yet not insignificant rise in off-lease volume returning to wholesale auctions across the country. So far this year, we're seeing used car values down in the 3% range year-over-year for late model inventory. That's your 1, 2, and 3-year-old cars. And we've seen a similar decline in residual values, which is where we expect to see the market auction values sit in the next 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So with residual values taking a hit, potentially some potential interest rate increases maybe later this year or in the years to come, leasing will grow to be a bit more costly for manufacturers, which would only put more downward pressure on the new car market, considering that, again, that represents 30% of all retail sales. And even for those that don't choose to lease, you are seeing more and more folks take longer-term loans, 72 to 84 months. I think we saw a significant increase in share of longer-term loans in the last several months. So that's going to make it more difficult for folks to justify higher transaction prices. With that, I will turn it over to Michelle for her thoughts.
Thanks, Alex. As Alex said, I'll just reiterate, you know, we've seen the last 2 years of record-setting years. We've seen 7 years of year-over-year growth. So these year-to-year comparisons are going to get tougher as the sales cycle plateaus. I guess I would say flat sales are not bad, considering where we are. Anything hovering near the 17 million mark has to be seen as fairly positive. If you look at the average annual sales since 1980, that's around 14.7 million vehicles. If we have a strong second half, as we're anticipating, and sales come in that low 17 million range, that would still be the fifth best year of sales ever. So I hear a lot about sluggish sales collapsing. That is not at all the case. They're still pretty strong and have to be viewed as strong considering where we are in the cycle. The other buzz we've heard this morning is Ford beating GM this month. It's always fun to talk about, but it's driven by fleet orders largely. If you look at Ford had fleet sales up, GM had fleet sales down. We can't ever predict those because we don't know what month they will come in at, but that can shift in the next month. So I will note that our records show Ford beat GM in March 2016 and March 2011. So have fun with that, kids. Incentives. Again, we're seeing a continuation of incentives being focused on older dealer inventory, 2016, and, of course, the slow segments, the alternative fuel segments, and the car segments. What we will be watching going forward is we're coming into the summer sell-down when the 2018s will be coming on the market, so we'll have to see how aggressive automakers get. We certainly would anticipate with some inventory buildup, we'll also see some more production cuts. We saw that today with GM announcing cuts in transmission production, so we anticipate we'll see more of that. In terms of automakers, if you looked at GM, they had a great month for utilities. It came in under our forecast, but largely due to rental car sales. And I would expect they had a very strong performance on the utility side, and I would expect that will continue because GM has some significant launches on the utility side going forward. Interesting to note, if you look at Cadillac, 70% of their sales are now the XT5 and Escalade models, and if you look at Buick, 75% of their sales are in utilities. So Ford came in stronger than we expected, largely due to fleet sales, but also F-Series and utility sales were strong, of course, at the expense of a continued decline of traditional car sales. As we've mentioned in previous months, Fiat Chrysler's in the midst of a lot of changeover, selling down cars, changing around the Jeep line. Honda, Toyota, about where we expected, flat with the focus, again, on utilities. I would note Nissan came in above forecast. Big increase in Titan sales, 436% increase. They had a $10,000 cash incentive on the 2017 Titan XD Platinum and some 0% on a number of their models, including Rogue. This month, and we'll see Rogue sales continue to go up as they add the Rogue Sport to that line. With that, let's open up to Q&A.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you do have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And our first question comes from Nathan Bellamy from USA Today. Please go ahead.
Hi, Nathan.
Hey, guys. So there's obviously, this is last few weeks, it's all about Ford. And when we see a leadership change like what has occurred there, in this industry, which works on long cycles, not much can be done strategically to, like, immediately to change the fortunes of a company. But if you were to look out the rest of the year, what would you expect Ford to do in terms of the blocking and tackling of just, you know, monthly sales to try to start to right the ship? I mean, the market's positive reaction to today's report's kind of interesting, but what do you think they can and will do over the next 7 months throughout the rest of this year?
Well, I'll start. I don't think that there is a lot they can do in the short term. I think longer term they have to be looking at what will they do with the car side. Do they have the right capacity for cars? And then we know they've got some future product coming. Ford has been pretty disciplined in incentives, very targeted geographically. I don't anticipate that will change because that's been strong in terms of from the finance department, I suspect, but we could see a shift in how they execute incentives. Alec, do you have something more to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on there, Michelle. I mean, there's only so much they can do in the short term, and if you look at their portfolio and the segments that are doing well, they're actually holding their own, right? You look at F-Series sales. They're outperforming the segment to some degree. They're up 8.5% so far this year. We know that that's likely their highest margin vehicle in their portfolio. Ford Escape is doing very, very well, up 2.7%. Not quite on pace with the overall segment, but they're still one of the top players in that ultra-competitive compact CUV segment. So that's certainly a strong play for them. I think where they struggle is similar to the rest of the industry. Fiesta, Focus, Fusion, I mean, sales are down significantly in those segments. You could argue that, depending on your personal perspective and opinion, you know, is their product on par with the rest of the industry? I would argue that, yes, I think so. I mean, I think the Fusion is is very compelling next to Accord or Camry or certainly GM's Chevy's Malibu. Focus and Fiesta, maybe the Focus isn't quite as compelling as that new Civic, which we know is very, very strong. So from a product perspective, they've just got to keep investing and ensuring that they're competitive with the rest of the industry out there. They've got plan incentives. As Michelle pointed out, the difficulty there is that you can stay disciplined on incentives, maintain strong margins on all of your sales, but then you know, you're certainly going to be giving up share to the rest of the industry, which has obviously been continuing to push on the incentive front. So it's a difficult balance. You got to get your board of directors comfortable with the fact that you're not just chasing share, you're chasing profitable sales, which is something that we know GM has certainly been about. We also saw that the previous leadership at Ford maybe didn't make as, although they publicly commented on mobility a lot, but they didn't have the same progress with maybe autonomous vehicle partnerships or ride-sharing partnerships or development of compelling electric vehicles. You know, I'll point to the poll. Certainly something that GM, I think, did a very, very nice job of, but even there, that's not really going to move the needle in terms of sales and profitability in the short or even medium term. So it's just got to be a broad focus across their entire strategy from the core product to finances and incentives and kind of future mobility needs. It's a broad stroke that isn't gonna change swiftly, I would say.
Okay, good. And just real quick on the Ford GM sort of rivalry. I mean, when it comes to monthly sales, you know, maybe your average person doesn't care, but like, would you say it's fair to say that their fates sort of are still linked to you, despite the fact that they're always kind of going back and forth? Like, are they sort of in the same boat? Michelle, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, you know, yes, they have the strong rivalry, but I think to focus on each other is just the wrong focus. There are so many other competitors they need to be paying attention to around them. It kind of gets silly.
Yeah. All right, good, thanks.
And our next question comes from Eric Lawrence from Detroit Free Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, guys. How are you? I wanted to just ask you if you saw any trends that might flip this narrative on cars versus SUVs and crossovers, like is with more millennials coming into the market. Do you see this changing where cars get a little more love?
In a word, no. No, in fact, you know, Eric, when we look at Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader shopping behaviors, we see a continuation of preference for SUVs and for versus cars. And if we look at our millennial studies, they're driving a lot of this. If you look at, I mean, they helped fuel the small sport utility boom, and now we're seeing an increase in sales of the midsize boom as they have children, so I see no end in sight.
Okay, so just continue the continue as is, I guess.
It looks that way, Alec. Do you see? I think I know your answer.
Yeah, I don't see any shift in the near term. I mean, with gas prices where they're at, and with even just the price of entry in a midsize sedan versus a small CUV, which is generally comparable. You know, you're usually cross-shopping Accord versus CRV, Escape versus Fusion. They offer very similar utility. Well, I'd argue the Escape is going to outperform Fusion in terms of utility offered and usefulness. There's very little difference in fuel economy. The price of entry is about the same. The ride height is it's a little bit higher, obviously, which is going to make folks a little more comfortable on the road. I don't see any end in sight, no.
The other thing, Eric, I would add, too, is that, you know, today's sport utilities, there isn't a huge fuel economy penalty. So that's taken out of the equation. And when we did a quick poll study on Kelley Blue Book, and the top three reasons people pick a sport utility over a car is cargo space, the high-up seating position, and the ease of entry and exit. So, and you think about millennials who are having children and they have child safety seats. I just don't think it bodes well for traditional cars.
So no, the tiny house movement won't translate to tiny cars.
No, but if you look at and what Alec mentioned before, we're also seeing a lot increased interest in that small, really small sport utility segment. So, they're coming in all shapes and sizes and price ranges. So, much as cars used to. So there's a lot of variety and a lot of choice for consumers.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much.
You.
And our next question comes from Rye Drewson from San Antonio Express News. Please go ahead.
Hey, Alec and Michelle. Good to hear from you. As always, I'm always interested in the truck aspect. And I think it's interesting, y'all talked about how the distribution may be because of or the lower sales by GM maybe because of fleet sales. But at the same time, I mean, it's interesting that Fiat Chrysler, Dodge brand, had a large bump. Ford had a large bump. They continue to seem to have large bumps every single month. And also Toyota's sales actually went up. And this is the first time in 2017 that Toyota's truck sales have gone up. I'm wondering why we're continuing to see this, especially given that we haven't seen, say, an infrastructure bill come out of the government, which a lot of people thought would drive truck sales, especially these full-size trucks. What are you guys seeing?
I'll let you go first, Alec.
Yeah, so I think with respect to truck sales, I mean, I think it's tough to point to any one thing that is really driving the overall growth or rebirth in that segment. I think it's a combination of many factors. I think on the one hand, you have just general preference in the U.S. I think there were a lot of folks that likely got out of trucks in, say, starting in 2008, 2009, as the economy faltered, as interest rates had increased at that time, as gas prices had skyrocketed. Folks, I think, had either delayed purchases or got out of trucks altogether. We saw a lot of irrational behavior in that time where folks would trade in either a truck or a large utility, take a beating at trade, potentially be in an inequity position and have to roll that over into their new car finance to get into, a compact or a small car that really didn't make sense for their needs. So I think that's part of what's driving it, folks getting back to their general preferences now that things in the economy have improved to some degree and affordability has improved to some degree. I would point to, while there hasn't been a major infrastructure bill passed necessarily driving the need from a commercial perspective, you have seen significant improvements in the real estate sector, especially with respect to housing starts. That's always been a significant driver of truck sales from a construction perspective, from a commercial perspective. So you've got certainly a core driver there. And then I would say, too, you're likely getting other folks that are seeing a lot of the attractive incentives, lease offers, finance deals that are opting to pull ahead their typical or expected truck purchase. So rather than, say, owning a truck for, whatever it is, 8, 9, 10 years, maybe they're trying to turn that over every 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. So I think folks are pulling ahead sales to take advantage of some of the new products that have been released over the last several years while taking advantage of a lot of the great incentives and finance opportunities that await them to stretch their buck a little bit further. So I'd say it's a combination of all of those factors, general affordability, improvement in real estate, reasonable gas prices, improved fuel economy. I think it's all those things coming together to really drive that segment.
Okay.
I would agree. And remember, the fleet is old, and people are back to work. Unemployment is low. The other thing is that Alec mentioned the decent incentives that actually have been going up on trucks, and at the same time, used truck prices have risen, and so. people look at, and they're in high demand, so people look at used truck prices and incentivize new truck prices, and you know, they have to make that decision, and sometimes it's more attractive to just go with the new.
Okay, okay. And now I'm wondering if I could have a follow-up. Just, you know, when you're looking at going into the rest of 2017, we've talked about in the past that some manufacturers will have to be rolling back some of their production lines or, you know, putting them off for a couple weeks as they try to work off this inventory they've built up. Do you think that's going to apply to trucks?
I think to some degree it could. I want to see what...
It varies by automaker, I think.
It does. I know GM in particular has just high days in inventory overall. I would say their trucks are likely subject to that as well, which is why we've seen some pretty strong incentive spend on that front. If you look at it historically, though, if you look at incentives as a percent of ATP, they have been rising in the truck segment since 2014. But we're still below the levels that we saw in, you know, 2007, 2008. So from that perspective, incentives have remained relatively steady in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see some slowdown in truck production. But again, not to a significant degree when Ford's able to get out there and sell 75,000 pickups in a given month. And, you know, it says to me that there's still very, very strong demand in that segment overall.
The other thing I would add is I believe General Motors has a new full-size pickup truck coming next year, I think. And so you will see some buildup of inventory probably as they take some plants down to for changeover.
Okay.
Check on that, but I think that's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
And our next question comes from Gabrielle Coppola from Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks to
morning.
Thanks for the commentary. Just to follow up on that, I wanted to ask if you could say a little more about, you know, how much production cuts you still think we need to see and which companies you think we might either cuts or scheduling slowdown at plants.
Yeah, look, you have the inventory numbers in front of you, I imagine.
Yes, I'm trying to look at that now. So
I would say generally, I mean, we'll probably see it on the car side more than utility and truck side, but that doesn't mean that there won't be some other cuts.
No, I think that's exactly it, Michelle. I think everyone is going to be, just about all manufacturers are going to have to watch and pull production in their sedan segments. I mentioned earlier that mid-size sedan sales are down something like 20%. Small cars, compact cars, and subcompacts, their sales are down 5, 6, 7%. Does that mean you need to see a 6 and 20% reduction in production for those particular vehicles? Maybe not to that degree, but it might not be too far off. You have to look at any specific manufacturers. It's tough to say. Again, you know, GM and FCA, they were running a little bit hotter than the rest of the industry, at least in terms of the major full-line manufacturers, with close to 100 days in inventory for each of them over the last several months. Again, you look at their mix, though, and they're more skewed towards trucks, which is always going to naturally have a higher days in inventory, a higher days supply required, because dealers have to have the right mix of inventory on the ground to meet consumer demand. So those numbers are a little bit skewed in that sense. But I'd say it's something you're going to see across the board, but specifically for sedans. And if I had to pick a manufacturer that are maybe can maybe avoid any significant production cuts, you know, look at Honda, look at Toyota. They've been running less than 60 days to turn overall. Subaru is down at 35 days. They're turning inventory incredibly quickly. So I would say that a lot of the import brands maybe are not going to be subject to significant production cuts, if any at all.
And by the way, there's a new Camry coming out, so they, you know, they certainly wouldn't sell. They'll be selling out the old as they ramp up the new.
Okay. And if I could just also, I mean, you talked about the, you know, you continue to see incentives you know, going up. How just overall, how comfortable are you, you know, with the way the industry is navigating the slowdown? I mean, I know you say, oh, it's not that bad, it's still pretty good, but just, you know, how, you know, how they say, don't worry, we've got this. Yeah. They say, don't worry, we got this. How confident, you know, are you buying that argument?
So I would say that we're very, very fortunate in that sense that, or the manufacturers are very fortunate that consumer preference, that the overall mix has shifted toward trucks and SUVs. And I say that because those vehicles tend to be far more profitable from a gross profit perspective than more traditional sedans. You look at the sale of a Camry, a Fusion, Accord, Malibu. Dealers are lucky to make anything on the sale of the asset itself, right? The money's made in the F&I office. The money's made perhaps with respect to the trade. But those same dealerships, if they're able to move a Silverado, a Tundra, a Ford pickup, you're actually going to be able to make a little bit of gross on each one of those sales. So in that sense, while incentives have increased, there's still enough room from a margin perspective to still maintain profitability if you're selling more trucks and more SUVs. And if you look at it historically, if I compare average incentive spend, which today is averaging around $3,600 a unit, which is shakes out to $3,200 per unit, non-luxury brands, a little north of $4,000 for luxury brands. Compare that to average transaction prices, which I mentioned earlier, kind of overall is around $34,000 per unit. You're basically talking about 10.3% in terms of the incentive spend to average transaction price ratio. That's the highest that we've seen it since we've been tracking it since 2005. 2005, we also saw 10.3%, and that's dipped down to as low as about just under 8% in 2012. So again, incentives are rising faster than transaction prices. We're still at a level, at least historically speaking, where we're on the high end, but still within an acceptable or a range that the industry can work with. And again, if with the fact that mix has shifted to trucks and SUVs, that certainly helps to offset some of the potential downside risk with rising incentives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you said 10.3%, that's where we are now, and that's the lowest since 2005.
That's the highest since 2005.
Highest, yeah. Okay, thanks.
I noticed that GM's press release says it's at 11-something, but we'll have to calculate that after this month's sales.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. And it looks like we have no further questions at this time. Michelle Bihar, do you have any closing comments?
Yes. So keep an eye out for next month's call in details. If you need anything else, please feel free to reach out to the public relations team and we'll be happy to help. Thank you all for joining and have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.